Support for this program is provided by Chevron, the human energy company.
This is Politico Energy. I'm Josh Siegel. President Joe Biden is delivering his State of the Union address tonight, and it's a huge opportunity for him to reset and shift public perceptions ahead of the 2024 election. That includes talking about climate change and clean energy, which are major priorities for the president, but also areas where he's angered friends and foes alike. So today, a special guest, Biden's top climate advisor, Ali Zaidi. I chat with him about the president's record and the pressure he's facing from his own party, along with what a second Biden term would like to accomplish. Zaidi tells me he thinks people shouldn't lose sight of the historic swings the administration has taken and the huge backsliding that would occur if Donald Trump won again. So here is my extended conversation with Ali Zaidi. It's Thursday, March 7th. We are joined today by President Joe Biden's top climate advisor, Ali Zaidi. So let's start out by talking about the president's State of the Union address coming up later tonight. How much will he emphasize climate change in his speech?
You know, the president's going to lay out a vision for the country, for our future. And what's become so clear over the course of his 3 years in office is that the president has approach climate in a fundamentally different way, not as a sidecar or a sideshow to his national security or his economic or domestic agenda, but as a thread that's woven through everything. So when he's talking about manufacturing jobs, you better believe that some of what he's talking about is lifting people up into careers, producing the clean energy products we're going to need to power a net zero economy. When he's talking about putting the U.S. in a leadership position around the world, you better believe that means also bringing our might and our example to the table in a global conversation about how we move forward on climate change. So I think what you'll hear from him is this vision of how we move out together with ambition, with unity, and with a focus on driving climate, like so many other things, through every vector of what we do in our domestic, our economic, and our international work.
So obviously the Inflation Reduction Act wanted to transition to that. It's the president and Democrats' trademark climate law. You know, but of course, I'm sure you're aware, we've seen polling out there that shows the public really isn't aware of the law and what's in it. So why do you think that's the case?
You know, the president's done so much work to turn America really into this magnet for private investment around clean energy and spurred so many jobs across the country as a result. Some of it's from the Inflation Reduction Act. Some of it's from the infrastructure law. Some of it's from us getting the Kigali Amendment through the United States Senate. Some of it's from the CHIPS and Science Bill. I think the American folks paying attention at home aren't really keeping score on which bill did what thing. But people know that what the president has done uniquely, forcefully, and historically is propel a national investment agenda that's prioritized investment in not just growing our economy bottom up and middle out, but in a way that's going to sustain, in a way that's going to help the U.S. lead the clean energy transition.
And many of the projects and investments coming from the IRA, you know, they're not going to be built yet by the time kind of the end of the year happens, by the time people maybe go to the ballot box. And for the most part, these green jobs so far, you know, aren't fully realized for many people, even if they do know kind of what's happening with all these laws, including the IRA. So what kind of challenge does that aspect present to you? And that there's an overtime element to these laws.
You know, I think there is a visible difference showing up in communities all across America. In New Mexico, what was once the San Juan Generating Station, a large coal plant that went away, now has folks today, right now, working to put solar in the ground to harness the sun from the desert south and ship it to points west. In Dalton, Georgia, Qcells isn't waiting a month or a quarter or another year to hire folks into manufacturing jobs. And that's true uniformly across the industrial Midwest, which has seen a manufacturing renaissance. And boom, we've got 170,000 charging stations that line our roads and highways. I think The visible difference is here. It's accelerating. And I think it's reshaping the political economy around clean energy and climate, political economy that I think is getting way more robust and bringing, I think, more and more folks behind this coalition that's demanding further acceleration on climate progress.
And people in the environmental community, of course, want to know what a second term for Biden would look like on climate. What are some things that were left unfinished, perhaps items that maybe fell off the table and weren't included in the Inflation Reduction Act that you could see the administration returning to or pushing for with another term?
You know, we've got so much to do to finish the job, whether it's in terms of the emissions trajectory that we're on. We've got more work to ladder up to fully achieving the economic upside of hitting 50 to 52% reductions in 2030. We've got infrastructure to build and folks to train up and hire, an American Climate Corps that's in the nascent stage being launched will enlist tens of thousands of folks who will then be able to see careers. So you've got in the power sector, we've got transmission lines that we need to build. We've got hundreds of projects around the country ready to be plugged in or proposed to be plugged in. We got to do work on the transportation sector to build out that charging infrastructure. I said we're at 170,000 charging stations. We set a goal, the president did, 500,000 charging stations by 2030. And then there are those sectors where the solutions were more nascent just 2 or 3 years ago, where I think we've got a whole new set of pathways for decarbonization opening up.
Interesting. Yeah, I did want to return later on to that industrial sector piece because that is important. You know, since Biden has been in office, U.S. oil and gas production has climbed to record levels, but many people still blame him for the gasoline price jump a few years ago. Obviously, they've since come down, but it has hurt him in some previous polls. So do you think the president should go out and be touting that output more? And, you know, I actually speak with some Democratic members of Congress or on the moderate side, but they tell me they certainly want the president to be talking more about that.
I think the president every single day is out there talking about how he has worked so hard to cut costs for American consumers. And we see that now, for example, in electricity rates, which almost uniformly across the regions of the country are coming down. I think that's a product of managing our domestic energy resources and a product of this investment agenda that's bringing cleaner energy onto the grid. So I think that the administration is out there talking about this every single day.
You don't think specifically on the oil and gas piece he should be talking about that more? Because just given, I mean, how fossil fuels and how the administration is handling fossil fuels is such kind of a dominant political talking point. And if you don't think you should be talking more directly there, is it because you're concerned, you know, younger green activists don't want to hear about that?
I think the president's talking very clearly and very plainly about what drives the climate crisis. It is the uncontrolled combustion of fossil fuels, which puts greenhouse gases into the atmosphere and continues to contribute to global warming. And that's why the president, in historic fashion, has not only made that a clarion call in the United States, he brought the world together around a consensus that we need to work towards transitioning away from fossil fuels, that we don't meet our science-based goals just by deploying clean energy with fossil fuels no end in sight, that there is a transition that needs to take place and laying the foundation on an accelerating path to decarbonize every sector of the economy.
And on the regulatory side of things, it does feel like some recent White House decisions are kind of representative of this maybe tug of war within the party's left and more moderate sides on how far to go on combating fossil fuels and how quickly. Most recently, the administration has moved to weaken or slow some climate regulations, including postponing, of course, most recently, a major part of your power plant rule. And you're reportedly considering throttling back regulations around electric vehicles and transportation. So do these moves kind of suggest there are maybe some limits to just how far the administration can push on the climate front without upsetting, you know, moderate Democrats from fossil fuel swing states and unions who are concerned about the pace of the energy transition?
Well, Josh, just a few weeks ago, I was in the press briefing room talking about the administration's decision to pause expanded authorizations of LNG. So I think that runs a little bit counter to the narrative as you describe it. As I look at the approach on power plants, we're continuing the course. And in fact, we're finding a way to go more comprehensive and more robust in terms of protecting fence line communities and capturing emissions reductions from the broader array of existing gas plants alongside other fossil plants. So
on the power plant rule, though, I mean, isn't delaying action on existing gas plants, of course, expected to be the largest source of carbon pollution going forward? I mean, isn't that potentially risky, given it depends on, you know, you actually completing that rule depends on not losing the election to Trump?
Look, if the question is, does leadership in the White House matter in terms of what the U.S. environmental policy outlook prioritizes, as someone who spent the first year and a half, 2 years working on addressing almost 200 regulatory rollbacks from the previous administration and trying to refill seats at hollowed out regulatory agencies across Washington. Yes, there's definitely a stark difference in terms of policy visions. And I think we're focused on doing what the president has laid out, doing it aggressively, doing it in a way that's durable, that brings people along, that's going to hold up in the courts. That's the right way to go. That's what we're doing.
Just to follow up on Trump, because you mentioned kind of the stakes here. I mean, what would you say if you weren't able to get another 4 years? I mean, Trump comes back in. Would you say that would make it impossible for the U.S. to meet Biden's targets for cutting emissions in half this decade? And if not the longer term net zero emissions target for 2050?
You know, I'll observe the limits of my position and what I can and can't comment on in terms of the election. But if you just look, even in the sort of closed loop system that we have, at the proposals the House Republicans have put forth, reversing course on the Inflation Reduction Act, gutting the Clean Air Act, undermining real protections for consumers and our energy security, not only would we miss our climate targets if we did that, American workers and American communities would miss out on the biggest economic opportunity of the century. I don't know why you would make that choice. And that's why I think the president has very clearly been pursuing this clean energy future.
And I wanted to close with a new area of focus I've heard you're really looking to emphasize in a potential second term, this intersection of climate and trade policy and how those can work together to address emissions from manufacturing on the industrial side. So this is obviously something we're hearing a lot about in Congress as well. There's a conversation around establishing a carbon tariff type of policy. What can you share with us about your plans there and how important this is to the Biden climate agenda?
For the longest time, people stared at the industrial sector and thought, that's too hard to decarbonize. It was written off as anything we could do in the 2020s or the 2030s. It was always a thing past mid-century. We actually set up leads for every sector of the economy. For the first time, the White House had a senior director for industrial emissions. So from day one, we've been charging at that goal. It's a wonky piece of business, but back in April of our first year, when we submitted to the United Nations our nationally determined contribution, it had in it a focus on industrial sector emissions and actually weaving together a domestic focus on industrial sector emissions into trade policy as well. So over the first 3 years, I think what we've tried to do is set up a set of interlocking policies, right? On the demand side, we launched this federal Buy Clean initiative, being the first mover to buy things like clean steel and cement and asphalt, flat glass, our GSA setting standards for what all of that means. And then we got dozen states to join us in setting their own procurement targets in this space. So really setting up the demand for this product in the marketplace. Then, of course, we went and fought for the resources to do this work in the infrastructure law, in the Inflation Reduction Act, billions of dollars in grants and loans and tax credits to help America's manufacturers clean up and in the process become even more competitive on the global stage. And then we've been, you know, trying to advance all of this as part of our trade posture as well. One of the big breakthroughs, the president engaged with the EU on this global arrangement on sustainable steel and aluminum. And, you know, one of the things we've seen is a lot of momentum behind this concept? How do you integrate climate and trade together? So I think this is a very massive area of potential. And it's not just environmental potential, it's massive economic potential as well.
And you see the conversations that are bipartisan on the Hill around CBAM, carbon tariff type policy is complementary to what you're talking about. You're supportive of those conversations?
You know, you've seen, for example, in the last couple of years, senators like Coons and Whitehouse and others, Cassidy, lift up different elements of what it takes to advance industrial decarbonization. For example, the Prove It Act, laying out what you need to do from a data perspective. We think we can do a lot of that, and we're going to go out and do it. You've seen a lot of really productive conversations about leveling the playing field and boosting America's industrial competitiveness through border arrangements. Conversations from Cassidy to Whitehouse to others, I think, shining the spotlight of different puts and takes and approaches. And then you've seen, I think, engagement from inventive companies like Air Products and others, Cleveland-Cliffs, the steel manufacturers themselves, as well as the steelworkers and the unions that see the opportunity in policies that will level the playing field and shore up our competitive advantage in the space. But we need to sort of keep going on this journey together and unlock a bunch of decarbonization on the other side.
And finally, just staying on Congress, permitting reform discussions still ongoing, being led by, I've reported, you know, Senators Joe Manchin and John Barrasso are actively talking. This seemed to be really an administration priority for a while, particularly on transmission. I know you mentioned earlier in our conversation, I haven't heard maybe as much talk about it recently from the White House as far as action in Congress. So is this still a priority for getting something done this year? Because obviously you're going to need that transmission to meet your climate goals. And are you actively engaged in these conversations on the Hill? And how are those talks going?
Look, Congress has an opportunity to move us forward in this space, but we've not been waiting for additional congressional action to figure out how to get things built more efficiently, responsibly, quickly all across the United States. We'll soon have rules out that cut the time it takes to permit transmission lines across public lands to 2 years. We'll finalize that soon. We just a couple of weeks ago brought together utility executives and state regulators and others to talk about reconductoring, essentially passing more electricity through existing power lines. So you don't have to go through a new siting and permitting process. And you've got at the independent regulatory commissions, FERC working on a set of enabling transmission rules, even the Nuclear Regulatory Commission just this week announced a plan to accelerate how we get SMRs, small modular reactors, into the marketplace. So I think what you're seeing is the executive branch eager to work with Congress when we can, but when we can't, or we're not making progress, continuing to run down the field. That's what the administration's been doing. And the president's, I think, really made it a priority across the cabinet.
So it seems like given all that action you're emphasizing at the administration level, it's just difficult to see something happening in Congress, given there probably would be trade-offs in any deal on transmission. There's going to be more from fossil fuels, given Barrasso's in that seat. Manchin's still there, right?
Look, the puts and takes of what it requires to get Congress to advance something successfully in this space, I'll leave it to folks on the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue to figure that one out. And if Congress is able to move something in this space, we think they should, we'll be able to move even faster.
National Climate Advisor Ali Zaidi, thank you for joining us today on the Politico Energy Podcast. It was a pleasure. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our free newsletter at politico.com/power-switch. And subscribe to Politico Pro to read our morning energy newsletter. Some of the music in today's show was composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. And that's our show. I'm Josh Siegel, and we'll see you back tomorrow.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. And they're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.